R. Sands Oil Expansion Community Forum on Thursday, May 2nd at 6:30 p.m. at the Augustana Lutheran Church in Portland. This is the fourth community forum about Zenith Energy's ongoing expansion of the Portland Tar Sands Oil Facility. The panel will discuss how this facility's operations can harm people, urban wildlife, rivers, and air quality, as well as background on the terminal site, climate justice impacts, ideas for public action, and more. Again, that's the Zenith Tar Sands Oil Expansion Community Forum on Thursday, May 2nd from 6:30 to 9 p.m. at the Augustana Lutheran Church, 2710 Northeast 14th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Coming up next on KBOO, it's Fight the Empire. Pair dives further into the Mueller report and looks at the current crisis in Venezuela. At 10, it's the Heather McCoy Show. Heather welcomes the Washington editor of The Intercept, Ryan Grimm, to talk about the recent political profile of The Intercept and his forthcoming book on Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Ken Jones talks with Meg Vogt, author of the new book of photographs and poems, MYKU, My Portland. And at 11:30, Black Book talks to Portland-born author Mitchell S. Jackson about his book Survival Math. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm or go to our mobile app and click on Donate.
Well, good morning. This is Fight the Empire. My name is Per Fogering, and we're going to return a little bit to the Mueller report. Last week, we noted that the Mueller investigators never talked to William Binney, Julian Assange, or Craig Murray, and others who had interesting information to offer. Now, William Binney was with the NSA for more than 30 years, and he was a technical director, and he came out with a report that the material from the Democratic National Committee that was made public by WikiLeaks was not hacked. It was leaked from somebody inside the DNC. And the reason that Binney offered was that, how did Binney know? Because there was not enough time for a hack to occur. You can tell by these time signatures on the material. And so it had to be a leak. And so another thing to keep in mind is that the material was true. It was the content of Hillary Clinton's private talks to Wall Street brokers, which were at odds with her public statements, and also information about the how the Democratic National Committee messed around with Bernie Sanders' campaign. Nothing in that material was false. It was all true information, and it was stuff that we had a right to know about. So whoever released that information, we should thank them. It's a public service. But anyway, Binney was never called by the Mueller investigators. And so moving further on, another question about the Mueller report. They talk a lot about Donald Trump and his attempts to build a hotel in Moscow. Now, Trump never builds anything. He gets other people to do the building, and he puts his logo, his brand on it, like his brand is supposed to be worth a lot of money. And so Trump tried, according to the Mueller report, Trump tried to get his hotel and his tower built in Moscow, but he never did. And that's just the question. How come Trump did not get his Moscow tower? Because if you go to Moscow, you'll see there are about a dozen or more U.S.-owned hotels there. All the big hotel chains have their hotels in Moscow. How come Trump was not able to do this? Well, there's a Russian-American writer named Julia Yaffe, and she wrote an article in Atlantic recently, and she said that, well, Trump didn't have the right connections, that in Moscow you really had to be well-connected to get anything done and to get past all the regulations and stuff. But Trump did not have the right connections. And she named one as this Russian-American person named Felix Sater, who is really, he served some prison time. The guy's a pretty sleazy operator. And he was acting on behalf of Trump in Moscow. And according to Julia Yaffe, Felix Sater, even though he was a Russian-American, did not impress the Russians. Apparently, he didn't even speak Russian that well. He sort of spoke with a Russian with an American accent. And another thing that Yaffe talks about is that all Trump had to offer was his brand name, which does not really count for very much in Moscow. It may be a big deal here in the United States, but not in Russia. So that was Julia Yaffe's take on that question. Once again, is why didn't Trump get his Moscow tower? Well, I can understand her take on this, but it doesn't really persuade me, because sort of the narrative we keep hearing is that President Vladimir Putin really wanted to cultivate Trump, to make him a kind of a useful idiot or a willing tool or whatever. And if Putin really wanted to cultivate Trump, that would have been the all the connection that he need in Moscow. So the fact remains that while other chains built their hotels, Trump couldn't get his erected. So if that explanation falls short, well, what is the explanation? Well, a writer named Larry C. Johnson has an answer. Now, Larry Johnson is he was once a CIA analyst and a State Department official. And in an article, he says that the FBI was targeting Trump, that Sater was very persistent about trying to arrange a deal. He kept talking to the Trump people that he could get them something in Moscow. And he was, according to Larry Johnson, Sater was an FBI, not agent, he was an FBI tool, that the FBI was using Sater to try and arrange a deal with Moscow. Going further, Larry Johnson talks about a Russian gangster named Henry Greenberg, not his real name, he had several names, but Henry Greenberg kept trying to set up a meeting with Roger Stone, who was a Trump confidant, saying that he had some sleazy information on Hillary Clinton. According to Larry Johnson, Henry Greenberg was also working for the FBI. And we also had the third case that Larry Johnson points out is George Papadopoulos, who was a young guy who was supposedly Donald Trump's foreign policy advisor or something. And he was contacted by this professor named Joseph Massoud, who also offered to have dirt on Hillary Clinton. And according to Larry Johnson, Joseph Massoud was working for British intelligence, MI6. So here you have a case where three people were trying to offer the Trump team damaging information on Hillary Clinton, but they were all working for the FBI or British intelligence. So this looks like it was they were trying to set up Trump to be the fall guy. In other words, they're trying to set him up and then expose him for trying to get dirt on Hillary Clinton for his campaign. So finally, another writer is Mike Whitney. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He actually lives up in Washington State, and he writes for Information Clearinghouse, and I think Consortium News. And he is saying that that Trump actually the Mueller investigation lets Trump off the hook for a good reason. Mike Whitney asked, why did Robert Mueller end the Russia investigation when he did? He could have let it drag out for another year or so and severely hurt Trump's chances for re-election, but he didn't do that. Why? We're assuming that the investigation was never intended to uncover the truth. If it was, then Mueller would have interviewed Julian Assange, Craig Murray, and retired members of the intelligence community. Basically, what Mike Whitney is saying is that this is kind of a warning to Trump that there was a quid pro quo, that basically they were telling Trump, you follow our foreign policy directors and we'll make Mueller disappear. That is Mike Whitney writing. You can find his articles. This one was on from the Information Clearinghouse. So you have this Russiagate thing has got lots of big holes in it. And you have to wonder, when you look at Trump, there's so many reasons to go after Trump. There are lots of reasons if you think impeachment is the way to go. There are lots of reasons to impeach Trump, but Russiagate is not one of them. Why don't they impeach Trump for being kind of an international bully, say for dumping the nuclear agreement with Iran, which President Obama had achieved, which is quite a feat in itself. And we seem to be heading for some kind of understanding with Iran. But Trump came in and kind of dumped that treaty. And now the Trump people, like John Bolton, are going very strong for, war with Iran. And so that would be right there would be a reason for impeaching Donald Trump. Why do the Democrats seem to want to focus on this so-called Russiagate investigation? Well, we can think of lots of reasons, but it seems one is that it fits in with the a lot of Democrats, sort of the neoliberal warriors, would like to go after Russia for one reason or another, and that if they could get Trump impeached or thrown out of office because of Russiagate, this would give little momentum to their drive for some kind of action against Russia. also the fact that the Russia was blamed by the Clinton campaign for their defeat in 2016. Fact remains that Trump won the election. He didn't get the most votes, but in our system, you don't have to get the most votes to win an election. You have to get the most delegates in the Electoral College, and that's how Trump did it. In other words, Trump was put in office by our political system. And from what everything I've read, the Hillary Clinton campaign was very upset by this, the fact that she did not run a very good campaign, and it just seemed for these reasons, it was seemed very smart to blame it on Russia. And so that kind of brings us to what's going on in Venezuela. And we can talk about that at length. If people want to call up with a comment or a question, our number is 503-231-8187. So here we are with Venezuela. Some of our politicians, our political leaders, you know, they're forever complaining about Russian interference in our elections. In fact, I just heard someone the other night saying that the Russians are bound to meddle in our 2020 elections. I'm not sure what evidence you had to offer. I didn't hear any. But you had, this is like a litany that's been going on now for a couple of years, that the Russians are meddling with our political process. And at the same time, we're trying to overthrow the legally elected president of Venezuela, Nicolas Maduro. Well, what would you call this? Some kind of a great contradiction here. If we're going to gripe about interference in our politics, why do we go around the world trying to change regimes all over the place? When we do that, we know that some of our leaders like to pretend that we have something to offer other countries, that we are the most advanced democracy on the planet, and that if they follow our example, they too can have a thriving democracy. Well, that's an obvious bit of fakery, because our political system, you look at who is in the White House, is hardly an example for the American version of democracy. It's like they are saying, well, if you follow our example, you too can have a president like Donald Trump. Well, there's been a lot said about what's going on in Venezuela, and we just have to say. Okay, well, we have a caller. Stuart's on the line. Good morning, Stuart.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey. How are you doing?
Oh, doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, I'm all things that he's done. You know, what happened to all these women that came forward and, you know, can't they get him on some of that?
I don't understand. What was your question?
The 20 or so women that he's, you know, been inappropriate or whatever.
Oh, okay. Well, Trump's got a pretty horrible record as far as his dealings with women, and you don't hear too much about that lately. But Well, that's a good question. Why not? Why don't they talk about that more? Well, okay. Glad you brought that up. We have another caller on the line. John is on the line. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Per. I like your show, but I've got a question directly for you.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it you and some other KBOO hosts aren't consistent about how Donald Trump got elected? He got elected by purged voters.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
that we've heard from Greg Palast over and over, but yet I think we should have a consistent message. You know, the Democrats were unwilling to talk about that completely messed up election, and you'd think progressives would be willing to be consistent about it. Mm-hmm. I'll let you answer off the air.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that is a very good question. It really bears investigation, how voters are purged all around the country. Greg Palast has been talking a lot about this, presenting evidence, and as far as I can see, nobody, whether Republicans or Democrats, nobody in Washington really wants to deal with that. I think they should. We hear a lot about voting machines that apparently they're getting new voting machines now that are supposedly foolproof, cannot be tampered with or meddled with by the Russians. What they don't say is that the voting machines being used now and that were used in the 2016 elections were pretty much the same ones that they used back in 2000 and 2004. And at that time, there were some serious questions were raised about the how they could be manipulated, not by the Russians, but by various secretaries of state in each state, most of whom apparently were Republicans. Two people I can think of raised this issue, Bob Fitrakis and Harvey Wasserman. And they talked about this a lot, but nothing was ever done about it. There's a few companies that make all these voting machines, and they refuse to explain. They refuse to give the details of how they work, claiming that this is kind of a corporate, as their sort of private information. They wouldn't divulge the information how these machines work. And so the whole investigation never happened. Now they're talking about it, so it seems like it's only when it's possible to blame the Russians that we talk about our voting machines. But anyway, the fact is that Trump, our political system, enables this kind of voter suppression. It is part of our political system, whether it's voting suppression or the Electoral College or all the money that flows into campaigns from big spenders, some of whom remain hidden, so-called dark money. And so it's all part of the way our democracy has been working right up till now, and this is the system that we are trying to get the rest of the world to adopt. Well, it's an obvious way. Once again, when you see who is sitting in the White House, I can't think of any reason why any country would want to try out our system. So here we are in Venezuela. We're claiming that President Maduro is not democratic enough. We have created our own president, this fellow Guaido, and we have put sanctions on Venezuela. We have seized their property. Apparently, we're trying to seize their embassy in Washington, although some brave people from Code Pink are occupying that embassy now. They got the keys to it from Venezuela. The Venezuelans have left that embassy and turned it over to people from Code Pink, who are in there right now, kind of holding down the fort. But when you hear about Venezuela, you don't get this. And this group called FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, has pointed out that in all the commentary on Venezuela, there were no, absolutely zero, elite force voices opposing the overthrow of the democratic elected government in Venezuela. Why is that? Why is there such a unanimity of voices among the so-called voices that count, the voices who are taken seriously? Why are they right down the line? There's no opposition to what the U.S. is doing in Venezuela. There are a few people who express qualms and kind of think that it could be done in a better way, but it's sort of taken for granted that the U.S. has the right and possibly the duty to impose our system of democracy on Venezuela. Another thing that they don't talk about very much is the Blackwater guy, Eric Prince. He has made an offer to send 5,000 mercenaries to overthrow Maduro. And apparently he got a lot of funding from people too inside. This is from a news story that two insiders with direct knowledge claimed that Eric Prince had requested at least $40 million in funds from private investors, as well as billions of dollars in frozen Venezuelan assets. Well, get that. So the U.S. has seized Venezuelan money, and Prince wants to use that money, which is taken from Venezuela, stolen from Venezuela, to overthrow the Venezuelan government. So, and this kind of connects with, I don't know if people remember it, but a few weeks ago, John Bolton was seen coming out of a meeting. He had a folder in his hand, and it was some piece of paper, and people could see that it said 5,000 troops. And people wondered, is Bolton pushing for 5,000 troops to go invade Venezuela? Well, possibly Bolton was thinking about the 5,000 troops, that mercenary troops that Eric Prince has offered to provide. Well, you wonder what next in Venezuela. One obvious thing is that any invasion would need a lot more than 5,000 troops. Venezuela is a large country. It's a mountainous country. It has very forbidding terrain where guerrilla groups can operate. Maduro has on his side not just the Venezuelan military, which you keep hearing about, but they have armed the people. They have people's militias, which apparently are a million or more people who are armed, and they are ready to support their government. And so any kind of an invasion would lead to a civil war with not just against the Venezuelan military, but against a million or so armed militias fighting in the jungles and the mountains against an invasion. But that has not been talked about very much either. So there you have it. Russiagate thing, which I guess there was a huge session, which people, the news is full of it this morning, is about between the Attorney General and the Democratic Party representatives on the committee, and they want to focus on Russiagate and sort of exclude any mention of some real reasons to impeach Donald Trump, namely he's a bully and a crook and all sorts of other things. So if you want to impeach Trump, go at it, fellas. Have a good time. But let's do it for the right reasons. This has been Fight the Empire on KBOO, your radio station. Stay tuned to interesting for Heather McCoy with her interview with Ryan Grimm from Intercept, which is another source of information worth checking out. So stay tuned. It's your station. You keep us on the air. Thank you.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 9:59. Coming up next on the Heather McCoy Show, Heather welcomes the Washington editor of The Intercept, Ryan Grimm, to talk about the recent Politico profile of The Intercept and his forthcoming book on Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez.
Holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please join us.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor Village Market's 8th birthday block party celebration on May 4th from noon to 3 at Village Market on North Trenton Street across from McCoy Park. Village Market is a nonprofit of Village Gardens working alongside North Portland community members to build food resiliency through youth leadership, community farming, and good food access. The Village Market birthday block party will include face painting and screen printing, a plant start sale hosted by our community gardeners, raffle prizes, food, plus a bake sale hosted by our youth leadership team, Foodworks. Again, that's Village Market's 8th birthday block party celebration on May 4th from noon to 3 at Village Market on North Trenton Street across from McCoy Park. Learn more at villagegardens.org or at kboo.fm on the right side of the